All too often, anger rears its ugly head in our deepest family relationships. How can we cope?
We'll discuss this and other questions from viewers today on Real Family Talk. Join us. It's time for Real Family Talk, your questions answered. During this episode, we are answering questions from viewers like you. Here's our first question.
My 13-year-old daughter, whom I grounded the other day for misbehavior, yelled at me and said, "I hate you." I froze. I didn't know how to respond. I felt like saying the same thing back to her, but I decided that it would not be helpful. I still don't know the best thing to do in situations like this. Do you have any suggestions? Great question.
Oh, wow. That's a tough one, yeah. Right? Because kids don't often think that their parents have feelings.
That's right.
So it's usually difficult for parents to hear things like that. So we want to thank you for your important question and for the parental wisdom you exercised when you stopped yourself from reacting to your daughter's hurtful statement. The brains of 13-year-olds are in the process of developing, hence the outbursts you experience. You know what? This even happens to adults who are supposed to know better. Many believe that when children say something rude to their parents, like what your daughter said to you, it deserves punishment. While we agree that it was inappropriate, we also believe it is important for parents to remain in control without overreacting in order to address the situation in a way that will benefit the parent-child relationship.
You know, the truth is, adolescence is a very delicate time of life. What parents do or say during this period has a lasting effect in the lives of children, as well as on the relationship between children and their parents. It's important to determine what's going on with your child that prompted such an outburst. By being proactive, remaining calm, and not taking personally what your child said, you can manage the conflict rather than exacerbating it. So less is more.
Absolutely. So since being heard and understood is one of the most important needs of human beings, this is a good time to get to the bottom of the feelings that caused your daughter to explode in such an inappropriate way. So a good approach to enter into your daughter's fragile world without causing more pain is to say to her in a calm and compassionate voice, "I hear you say that you hate me." Now, while this may seem unrealistic and too postmodern, it will validate your daughter's feelings by conveying to her that despite the pain she caused you, you are willing to hear her out and try to understand her, rather than using your parental power and authority to exact punitive measures, which will only incite a bad situation and make it worse. You will escalate the situation.
This will allow you to dig deeper into what is happening to your child's emotions, rather than reacting to the emerging symptoms of what may be a serious condition. Remember, she's a teenager. If you have a relatively good relationship with your daughter, she may likely respond when you say, "I hear you say," as Elaine just mentioned, "Yes, that's what I said. But I didn't really mean what I said. I was upset because instead of asking me what happened at school, you took the teacher's word without checking with me for my side of the story. I felt frustrated and angry that not even my mother was being fair with me." So this usually is what happens to teenagers. And it's really why they respond the way they do, because they're simply frustrated and they don't have the tools to respond in a more modulated way. But the way you respond will have much to do with how this develops and how it goes and gets better.
Yeah, and there's something else. When parents respond in that way, you're actually teaching your child how to handle their emotional, what we call hijacks, yes. right? She was hijacked because she felt she was hijacked.
She was hijacked, yes.
Because she felt that her mom was not listening. She didn't feel validated.
So she was frustrated.
So the easiest thing to do is to say, I hate you. So when the mom responds
in the way that
you know, shows that she heard her, it makes her then feel remorseful, you know, sorry that she responded in that way.
So it's a teaching moment.
It is a teaching moment, and we're teaching our children how to handle their emotions, how to respond when things are done or said to you that you don't really like. Because as children, children learn their what we call psychological tools from their families, from the adults in their lives.
Their parents are modeling. And the better you model to your children, the better you teach them how to become adults that are in control of their emotions.
Absolutely. And so, you know, again, someone might say, well, why do I have to handle my emotions? Because you have to handle your emotions.
And because you're the adult in the relationship.
It doesn't mean, yes, and that's what I wanted to say, which is what we always say to people. Remember, you are the adult in this relationship.
Yes.
Right? But people may say, isn't it important to have emotions? Yes. And everyone has emotions. But the Bible even says, in your anger,
do not sin,
right? So we want to be sure that we're teaching our children how to handle difficult emotions and good emotions as well. This is also a good opportunity as a parent to apologize if necessary and give your daughter a chance to tell her side of the story. Being misunderstood is an awful experience, especially if you are a teenager and the person doing the misunderstanding is your parent. Children who are regularly misunderstood by their parents will soon have no desire to be around them or even approach them and will look for someone else with whom they feel comfortable talking. This is why listening to your teenager is key to building a relationship of trust with him or her and increasing the connection between you.
In James 1:19, the Bible states, everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. If you model this behavior, your daughter will likely emulate you, bringing greater peace to your home and improved relationship between the both of you.
We'll be back after a short break with more questions from viewers like you. Stay with us.
On today's edition of Real Family Talk, we're answering questions from viewers like you. Here's the next question.
Since you're not supposed to let the sun go down while you're still angry, says a viewer, how do you deal with an issue with your spouse that cannot be settled before the sun goes down, when the issue requires more time to be settled?
Great question. One, I'm sure you're not alone in asking. Let me start by saying that anger is often a response to a perceived danger to oneself or to someone else. It is also a response to frustration, which has been identified for some time as a subsequent hostility. So these are some of the emotions that you're dealing with when you are managing anger.
Now, this is a great question because if you remember way back when we got married 30-something years ago, that was one of the things that I would often say to you. That, you know, if we had a disagreement about something, I would say, you know, we can't go to bed without resolving this. Right? And what was it that you would always tell me?
I don't know. I thought I was the one who said that. Was it not I who said we couldn't go to bed without managing?
No. Because it was advice that my grandmother gave me before I got married. And so if we were having a disagreement, I would say, you know, stay awake because we have to resolve this. And I think what you would say is that that's the Bible didn't literally mean that you have to resolve the whole situation.
Oh, is that your recollection?
That's my recollection.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll go with your recollection.
Yeah. And so what it helped me understand in helping this viewer is that we need to down-regulate the anger, mm-hmm. right? And there are ways in which we can do this, right? So we don't have to go to bed angry with each other.
Even if we haven't totally resolved.
Even if we haven't totally resolved the situation.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there's a misunderstanding that you have to stay up the entire night, you know, to resolve it. And some issues may take more time than that.
You may need more than one session to be able to talk through an issue and come to a place where you have settled on how you're going to proceed. But yes, I think Paul is very clear that we shouldn't allow the sun to go down without resolving our anger.
Right.
We can agree that we have a difference of opinion, but our anger needs to have subsided to the place where we can actually still sleep in the same bed.
Exactly, exactly. Because here's what we know. Anger destroys the peace within relationships. And when one is angry, one tends to do or say things one later regrets. That's one reason the wise men Solomon offered in Proverbs 16:32, better a patient person than a warrior, and one with self-control than one who takes a city. Later, the writer declared in Proverbs 25:8, like a city whose walls are broken through is a person who lacks self-control. Solomon's counsel is impeccable. Relationships always do better when we learn to control our anger. If we don't, we often find ourselves having to walk back what we said or did in a moment of uncontrollable rage. Interestingly, Solomon refers to the reality of behaving out of control, often when anger is present, as a city whose walls are broken through. In short, a place unsafe for human dwelling.
And of course, in our relationships, certainly in our homes, we don't want to be in a place that is unsafe. However, your question deals directly with the text in Ephesians 4:26 that says, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath, which is what we've been talking about. Here, the Apostle Paul actually uses the language of Psalm chapter 4 and verse 4 and qualifies what a person of faith should do when angry, that is, not sin. The Apostle Paul and his choice of language about the presence of anger in the life of Christian makes clear that if we allow that emotion to surface, it should be contained and a controlled one rather than the explosive behavior that invariably characterizes uncontained anger. Ruling one's spirit or allowing God to have control of our lives compels believers to live lives of peace. That is what should be happening in our homes. Even when anger comes up, and anger comes up because we have disagreements, because we're not the same person, we have different opinions, that's okay. But we should learn how to approach these matters and manage them in a controlled way, calm, taking deep breaths, so that as we relate to one another, we're not destroying our relationship, and we're certainly keeping a level of peace in our homes.
Yeah, so, you know, I love what you're saying about what Paul is saying, and certainly his counsel is a lot more comprehensive.
It is.
Than just, you know, the sun going down, right? Because it is, again, more about the self-control. And he's also talking about the whole notion of renewal, right? And restoration that sleep brings. So if we can think about taking control of our emotions, of self. So here, that therein lies the problem. Because most times when we're angry, we
are
think-
out of control.
That's right.
Yes.
Who's out of control?
The person who's angry. We're out
right?
of control.
And you're out of control. Why? Because you can't control the other person.
And because you've allowed yourself to be overcome by emotion, which is what many of the experts call flooding. You become flooded. And when you become flooded, you're going to drown in this water.
And what you're drowning in
is your brain.
The adrenaline in your brain, right? So your brain actually loses that oxygen and your ability to think clearly. I'm just so amazed by God's creation and how he made us and that he's given us the capacity. And he tells us in his word, and this
is what
Paul
the counsel.
This is
he
what Paul is
counsel.
Saying.
Yes.
This is what Solomon is saying.
Yes.
This is what the fruit of the Spirit is saying. That whole issue of self-control, it's really about self. And one other thing that I want to say about anger that I often say to people is that anger many times is a mask for other emotions.
Yes.
Right? So you might feel frustrated at your child when they don't listen to you. You might feel sad. You might be disappointed that your spouse forgot your birthday or forgot to pick up your dry cleaning or forgot to take out the trash. So those are the real emotions, but most of us have practiced
to be angry.
Yep.
It's the only emotion. We're either happy or we're angry.
Right, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So we really need to learn how to manage ourselves, manage our emotions, and be self-controlled.
Yes, this is really true.
Absolutely. So despite dealing with disturbing dilemmas that invariably surface in the experience of believers and their respective spouses, that reality cannot be bigger than the peace Jesus offers. God's peace brings the assurance of calm, composure, rest, and serenity for his children. David suggests in Psalm 4:4 that we contemplate traumatic situations with composure and dependence on God.
And regardless of how difficult the situation, one must have an unruffled attitude before being able to fully solve any vexing state of affairs with one's spouse. Always remember Jesus' promise in Mark 10:27, with man this is impossible, but with God all things are possible.
For this viewer, you and your spouse will continue in our prayers as you trust God to help you settle your differences so that your marriage will give honor and glory to Him.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
On today's edition of Real Family Talk, we're committed to answering questions from viewers like you. Here's the next question.
Our two preteens are always at each other's throats. Instead of acting like brothers, they often seem to be mortal enemies. At 12 and 10 years of age, I expected them to have been more settled by now, causing less stress to my wife and me. We often serve as jury and judge rather than enjoying each other's company. We welcome your opinion about what we should do, I would say.
Well, welcome to parenthood. Unfortunately, your story is repeated in households all over the world. Regardless of culture or region, sibling rivalry is operative in most families until children grow out of it, if, in fact, they ever do, or until they are socialized by their parents to solve their differences without pulling the entire family into their disagreements.
As parents, it's up to you to determine how much longer this will continue. What usually happens is that siblings get into fights or big disagreements, then pull their parents in to determine who's right and who's wrong. The problem with this model is that for the remainder of their lives, at least as long as they live in your home, you will constantly be stuck in the middle of their conflicts. So, unless you enjoy brokering the peace between your sons, when you have more important things to do, you need to empower them to take ownership of their disagreements by giving them tools to handle their conflicts without involving you, or you will spend an inordinate amount of your time brokering the peace or the war with your children.
That is so true. So parents, you can change the conflict paradigm between your sons by having a conversation with them at a meeting time you've all agreed upon. So we're saying, have a sit-down meeting with your sons. And they're old enough, 10 and 12 is old enough for them to understand what it is you're going to share with them. During the meeting, share with them your expectation for them to work things out by patiently listening to each other, then subsequently arriving at a reasonable decision with each other about the issue at hand. Also, share with them that if they are unable to solve their differences between the two of them and decide to come to you, there will be consequences for whoever you identify as being in the wrong. Soon you will notice that the wrongdoer will have a built-in incentive to solve the conflict and to avoid parental consequences. The other motivation will be the satisfaction of working things out by themselves without the help of their parents. This arrangement will become a win-win for your sons and a win-win for your entire family. Now, we know that this may sound easier said than done, but the more you practice this with your children, the easier it will be for them to do this. Not ever easy, but at least you will be teaching them skills that will help them learn to resolve their differences. And these skills will be transferred later in life in other relationships that will be helpful to them as they deal with difficult situations.
You know, the Bible is clear about the responsibility of parents. In Proverbs 7:24 and Proverbs 22:6, it says, "Now then, listen to me, pay attention to what I say, and train up a child in the way he should go, and even when they're old, they will not turn from it." As you share wisdom with your sons about how they can manage their conflicts, you will train them to be the kind of men you hope they will grow up to be. But you have to take the bull by the horns. You can't just let it go. It's a lot easier to just sit back and do nothing about it. The truth is, they are your children. They're God's gift to you. They're your responsibility. And it's your privilege to pour into them the kind of godly skills that will help them, not only in the relationship with one another, but in future relationships, especially when they have their own families.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I'd like to share with this audience, the viewers today, is that it is difficult. You know, it's difficult when your children fight, but it really does work if you say to them, and we did this with our children, which we told them, you know, if you come to us, we'll decide who's right or wrong. And most kids don't want you to decide because they want to be right. And I think they learned how to resolve their differences on their own. The other thing that we shared with our children was how important it was for them to become allies and friends. And they also learn that when they're resolving their own differences. And I would dare say that they're still friends today in adulthood. So we hope that your home will be a more peaceful place in the days ahead and that your children will be well on their way to learning how to be responsible by pulling their own weight and managing their lives for success.
I love what the Bible says in the book of Psalms, 127 and verse 1. It says, "Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain." Above all things, we encourage you to put God front and center in your home and family. And as you do, you can be sure that He will be working with you to build a little piece of heaven in your own home.
Thank you for watching Real Family Talk. Join us again when we'll share more about strengthening families and inspiring hope. See you next time.